Whoa.
Hello, everybody.
That
was jarring.
I need to get back in. What the fuck? I got flipped the bird off when we joined the call. Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode whatever this is. 2 AM. I'm kidding, aren't you? Of Millennial Movie Talk. I'm your host, Alex Lamb. I'm fixing my lights because I was a bit bright.
Like his
future. But anywho. This is the show where we talk about movies and sometimes shows, and mostly today will be shows.
It's going to be 90% shows today.
90% shows today because everything's come out for now, and we'll give you a little update on the box office game that we've been doing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And yeah, a bit of this, bit of that. More importantly, I'm joined by two fabulous co-hosts. Down the bottom underneath me is Brayden.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, Brayden. And just on top of Brayden, on the other side of me, I think it's the right side. Christian.
Hello.
Now, Christian, you've been gone for a while, so we'll get to hear all the fun and exciting stuff that you've been doing just in a moment. But today I thought I'd talk about the sponsor of our stream, Raid Shadow Legends. No, I'm kidding.
God.
Oh, my God. You totally had me there.
They got us too.
What's everyone been up to?
God damn. Not too much. Not too much. Been sick this past week, so I've been reading a lot and recovering.
Like sick?
Like sick? Like sick. Not really that. No. But yeah, so that's been fun. But I'm feeling a bit better now. It's all good. Done a lot of reading, done a lot of watching, done a lot of playing. And it's been a good time, but I'm mostly interested because I'm gonna come out of the gate straight with everyone here, which is rare for me. I'm probably not gonna be talking much this episode because a lot of the talk today is gonna be between the two of you, because the two of you have a lot of catching up to do on a lot of TV shows that you guys are really into.
This is true.
And I'm excited to listen.
Some shows are finished. Some shows have started.
And some coming back.
That's right. Well, I should say some new seasons have started. Not entirely new television shows.
No, I should have deciphered that. That's all me.
But that's okay.
Oh,
that's okay. Alex, which you had to rank the Succession and Ted Lasso's. Which ending did you like better?
Oh, they're both very different, aren't they?
Exactly.
Oh, that's hard because one of them broke my heart and the other one broke my soul. So Ted Lasso broke my heart because that was so sad but bittersweet and joy. Mm-hmm. But when I wish he just stayed at Richmond, but that's not the point of the show. But on the other hand, Succession broke my soul because my number one boy, my oldest boy.
You're a Kendall man. You're a Kendall guy.
I'm a Kendall guy, and Kendall severely did not come out on top in this show.
Yeah, it killed me.
Spoilers for Succession. It's been weeks.
I was going to say, assume you're going full spoilers in terms of...
Yeah, we'll go full spoilers. So big spoilers for Succession season 4, or the whole series now, I guess. So if you're new, click off. I might put in a little text thing here while Chris is talking just so people know. But yes. Yeah, it's over, Chris.
Yeah, it's over. And the kids lost. The kids are just kids, aren't they?
Oh, God. They're fucking kids.
It was not, I think, what anyone expected, but still a perfect summary of the show.
It seemed natural.
Exactly, which is the best type of ending. Didn't see it coming, but when it came, it was like, yes, this it worked.
Sorry about this. it just goes off that big straight away. Like, there's nothing I can do.
Yeah, yeah. Try and get
it. That's perfect. Actually, I think just leave it like that. I think that was spot on.
But yeah, I think you said it best, perfect. Alex, when you said that the kids were fighting outside of Dad's office.
Yeah. Right.
Yep. And it took me back to one of Logan's last, I think possibly last scene with all three of them, when he tells them that, like, he loves them, but they're not serious people.
Yeah.
And the true meaning of that came through for me in the finale.
Yeah, 100%.
Basically, none of them are there because of who they are. They're all there because they're Logan's kids.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Perfect ending.
It encapsulated exactly what the show was.
And led up to.
Yeah. You know, I mean, fucking...
Because, like, Tom, who's my boy, Tom and Greg are my guys.
Yes, and you did very well.
They are there. Tom's at the table because of his actions, because of himself, not because he's Logan's kid. No. And he won.
But with saying that, Tom's there not for, like, reasons that are fantastic and shine through about Tom.
Yeah,
Tom's there because he can be easily manipulated and swayed.
Yeah, like, but he's, you know, he runs the, you know, he's running things. He's the CEO. He's done well for himself, regardless of what he's doing. I'm sure he's happy. Because he was just getting worried about getting left behind completely a few episodes ago. But him and Greg had a really, really nice moment in the end.
Yeah, him putting the sticker on Greg.
Yeah.
But to me, him putting the sticker on Greg just shows that Tom still treats people like furniture.
yeah, but Greg is his little...
Greg's his little Greglet.
His little secret. Greglet. Like, yeah, exactly. And Greg is like just a young Tom willing to do anything.
I love in the fucking wedding episode when they... When they're all, like, running around and doing stuff, and, like, they keep telling Greg to do stuff, and Greg's like, well, I can do this, and then they go, no, we've got a bunch of Gregs to do that. And he's like, I don't really like how I'm being used like this now.
Yeah, one of my favourite Greg lines is when he comes over, talks to the three siblings, and decides that they're a group and they're the quad squad.
Yeah, the quad squad.
Just tries to invent a little, like, dynamic between them.
He tries to incorporate himself in the core four.
Yeah, quad squad.
Which is great. Greg shine. Greg, like, I got a friend at the moment who's currently watching the show. They're on season, I think they're at the end of season two.
Mm.
And they're like, oh, Greg's like, you know, he's the audience. He's like the everyman in the situation and that. And like he's the only one that's like good. And I'm just like, just you wait.
Oh, yeah, no.
I'm like, because like season three, the end of season three, Greg, oh my God, when he's got his girlfriend, he's suing Greenpeace, he's got his girlfriend, then he goes and finds an Italian princess.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, maybe I should get with her instead. Greg's like the character that starts out with the most morale and then just gets dragged into the mud.
Yep.
With the rest of them.
And Logan had a special liking for Greg in a weird way.
Mm-hmm.
His name was on the wheel in some capacity.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
Then when Greg found out his name's on the wheel, he thought that meant he had some sort of stake in the game.
Yeah. But no, like, so Greg and Tom were always the kind of in the family, but the outsiders and the outer rim, if you will.
Yeah.
And that they were the ones that needed to take action and have merit to survive and get their places and get places. The kids did not need that. And that, yeah. Perfect ending.
Wow.
Kendall.
Yeah.
Kendall was the biggest.
Oh my God, Kendall.
The worst of the kids. Because I feel Roman, it was more about him and his father than him wanting to run the company. It always was.
Roman was the one that was the most affected by the death of Logan.
Exactly. And that was always going to be the end. Like, Roman didn't really want to be CEO. It was all to do with impressing the father, you know.
Exactly. As soon as Logan was out the picture, he had nothing left to do. But yeah, man, Kieran Culkin in the funeral episode,
amazing.
It's as much as I would love Kendall and Jeremy Strong to win the awards, if they're up against each other, I really think this should be his time to win for playing Roman. Because yeah, that funeral scene where he's like, is he in there? And like, he turns into a mess.
The entire whole last few episodes, like his denial starts on the boat, and when he breaks at the funeral, you realize, oh, he's been putting on this everything since like the boat, like two episodes ago.
And then you've also got his confrontation with Mattsson at when they go to Sweden,
yep,
or wherever they go. And like, we're just like, you couldn't even let us grieve for him. Like,
yeah, he was mad.
I love Mattsson. I love the scene where Mattsson and Tom have dinner, and Mattsson basically just tells Tom that he wants to have sex with Shiv. And it's all just a game with Mattsson to see, you know, if I can tell this guy to his face, I want to fuck his wife and he doesn't do anything, he's going to be my CEO because I can say whatever I want to him and he's just going to go along.
Yeah, they're like making sure that there's no bad blood there. Like,
yeah.
And then,
yeah, no.
Shiv, in the end,
Shiv's a cunt.
Shiv got what she wanted, really. Shiv just wanted to be seen as being at the table and be you know, her brother, not be overshined.
And she, you know, she's closer because Tom. And
exactly,
like, the last scene of the show is her getting into the car with Tom, and that has to be the most emotionless, loveless handhold I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah,
which is absolutely brilliant because it's just basically the relationship she had with her father, she now has it with her husband.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, like, he was all powerful and she wanted the power. And now it's just her husband's got the same power that their dad had.
And in the end, she stopped Kendall. Like, she got Kendall what she wanted in that she didn't want Kendall to win and, you know, be the top boy. She wanted to be top boy. Or top anything.
I want to talk about Kendall's meltdown in the boardroom.
Yeah, when Shiv took away everything he ever wanted.
Yeah.
And she gave her reasoning, which is the worst part, because she didn't think, she doesn't think he's good at it. She doesn't think he should be the CEO.
And when he lies about his confession to them about killing that, or being involved in the death of that, that waiter, and he's just like, oh, I made that up. And it's just like, we know he didn't make that up.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's just saying whatever he can now to try and retain his seat.
It just broke the bond between them, whatever was holding it together.
And it from there it just got the moment I lost all of it for Kendall, which I've been a Kendall boy from day one. I think the actor that plays Kendall was absolutely amazing. Still think he's amazing.
Jeremy Strong.
And I thought that this was like, All of the actors involved in this should like get awards if they can. But him in that scene where he and it was the moment where he essentially attacked Roman physically.
Yeah.
Like he grabs his face. Yeah, that's when I went, Kendall's gone.
Yeah.
Because Kendall's always been the one protecting Roman. And to see that happen and then him try to like push Shiv, and then what I love in that scene is Roman stepping up to protect Shiv.
Yep.
But
it just became the fantastic big brother fighting with the younger siblings.
It was the three kids fighting outside their dad's office.
Yeah,
like it was said earlier.
And to quote Logan, "You're not serious people."
Mm-hmm. They're not. Yeah, they're not serious people, and they're not killers.
No, they're not. And then Kendall's final scene, looking out at the bay
with his dad's bodyguard.
Yep. And what has he accomplished, really? His ex-wife, who he still loves, and his kids are actually scared of him and actively trying to get away from him. They also think he's, like, evil because of the political moves going on.
Mm-hmm.
And his siblings don't believe in him, hate him, and betrayed him at, like, the culminating moment. What's he done?
And you know what? And he's got that bodyguard there. He can't even kill himself if he wanted to.
That's Jesus. Yeah.
Like, because I thought at the end, I thought he was gonna jump off or throw himself into the river. Or I really thought Kendall was gonna kill himself.
I never got anything along those lines, but yeah.
Like the moment where I knew things were too good was when they're all in the kitchen with each other, and you're just like, and they're all getting along. They're doing a meal for a king.
Yep.
Where they just like take a bunch of nasty shit, like Shiv and Roman take a bunch of shit from the kitchen and blend it up and make him drink it. Like that was all just fun kids, like siblings hanging out. Exactly. And they were like really getting along. And it always happens in the show where as soon as those three get together, like
they regress.
They all start, they regress.
They always have these kind of young sibling moments.
Yeah.
Yeah, before it gets serious again. And they're trying to screw each other.
Yeah, this is still by far just one of the best shows ever made, I reckon.
Yeah, and just it felt really good to have it end with solid feeling and mm-hmm. didn't feel wrong, felt right.
Ended up on top.
Congratulations. Another show. Yeah.
That ended when it was meant to end.
Pulled this off also recently.
And that's Ted Lasso, season 3. It also ended. I'll change this text.
I gotta say,
so you can change the text so that it now says Ted Lasso spoilers.
It was weird because it really didn't, and because I wasn't thinking about it that it was going to be ending. It really didn't feel like a last season, like for most of this one.
Mm.
But they really brought it together in the last few episodes, or last episode even.
Man.
They hit the storylines they needed to hit, I felt.
Oh, I thought they nailed it.
Yeah.
I thought they did a really solid job with the final episodes, especially this finale, man. This finale was a fucking something else. Especially the montage at the end. And it should be illegal to play Father and Son by Cat Stevens ever.
That's cheating.
That's cheating. Guardians 2 did it, all right? No one else can do it. It hurts.
I'll just start with saying, didn't love the team singing the farewell song.
Oh, didn't you?
But then when I watched it the second time, and this is a bit awkward, went away and I was like, oh, this is kind of really, really cute.
Yeah, because Ted always made him sing songs for everyone else.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I think the first time it just broke my immersion a little bit. It was like, I'm very aware I'm watching actors perform a song and not real
they're
people.
They're doing the Sound of Music song, the goodbye song in Sound of Music.
Yeah, I think it's just the way they're choreographed, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah, that didn't bother me. Trying to remember the peak moments of, I mean, Ted and Nate having a conversation.
Yeah.
Exactly what we needed.
I was at the same, in the same tears as much as like Nate was tearing up. I was tearing up.
Yeah. Yeah. And then like Ted being like, you don't need to say it. And then Nate's like, no, I have to.
Yeah. And his voice is like almost breaking as he says that. Oh, yeah. It's going to make me cry now. Nate's redemption has been the best thing ever.
And people kept saying it happened. Some people have been complaining heaps about a lot of things in this show happening off screen. Like big important moments happening off screen. What was the big ones?
Well, there's a lot of Nate. A lot of Nate's, like Nate quitting.
Nate quitting. West Ham was off screen. The team discussing whether Nate should be allowed to come back was off screen. Obviously, Ted telling Rebecca that he's leaving was off screen. That didn't happen. Like, we didn't see that. But there were some other ones and nothing ever bothered me because.
Neither. It's more they weren't throwing it in our face. Like, Nate's redemption felt more natural to me because it didn't feel like. It felt like he came to his decisions and he made the right decisions and like he did actually realize and change rather than it was like really forced just what was going on, you know?
Yeah, and to me, the show's been always been more about the people's reaction to these big events happening than the big events themselves, and how, like, the fallout of the events and how people deal with them rather than the events themselves. Because a lot of the show goes into, like, mental health and trauma of the past and how that affects us today.
Big time.
Yeah. It's also like the daddy issue show as well.
Because
Nate's got daddy issues, Ted's got daddy issues.
Does that explain Rupert? Does Rupert have daddy issues as well?
Rupert might have daddy issues.
Must be. That's why he's a dickhead.
Yeah, even Rebecca's got daddy issues.
My dad's in the chat saying, I swear the actors were actually really crying in that last episode.
They definitely were.
Yeah, like they absolutely loved the ending as well.
Yeah, it's an amazing ending. And yeah, just awesome.
Biggest moment for me, a lot is mentioned about the Believe sign. And then when it's needed most, Mr. Tart goes and gets, and you're like, what is that? And when he puts it down, I'm like, is that a receipt? Like, what is, has he bought something? Like, what the hell is going on? You realize it's the Believe sign. Yeah. And then they all have a piece. Oh man, I broke down.
That was like, heartbreaking.
Oh man, I was
absolutely. Oh my God. Just tears, like enough tears to make flowing. A grown man cry. And it did make a grown man cry.
Yeah.
My God, just them all putting it back together and then putting their hands in the middle over it.
Yep.
And Nate
as well, like, had it looks, I think, in that had a little moment there.
Yeah, he gets in and he, you know, they couldn't do it more perfect, in my opinion.
And then it's that part right where they then go out in the field and they realize that they've got a game to play and everyone's like in this emotional mood. Yeah, everyone's crying on the field when they need to be like.
Oh, wait, no, that's at half. they will go into the field crying when Nate and Beard roll out the TV and play them the video.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
And yeah, I love that they won the game, but they didn't win overall. That felt right.
Yeah, that like, did. Very natural. It felt realistic.
Right. And realistic just because Man City are too good.
Yeah, and they have no control over that, but they did win that game. Like, it matters to them.
They literally did everything they could have done right.
Yep. And so the second moment when that broke me was after they win, and they're like, and the commentators are like, Lasso celebrating with his team, and he's doing the dance from episode one.
He does the dance.
Oh, man, that was like awesome. Crying laughter, like, for me, I was just like, oh my God, like, and he's so happy. It was beautiful. It was so beautiful.
I love Roy and Jamie. Just like them being friends and
and a sobering slap in the face from Keely, like kicking the Pope out on the street because
when they both go into Keely's house and they're like, we want you to choose which one of us you want.
Yeah.
And
rightfully, she's like, get the fuck out to both of them.
Get the fuck out.
another off-screen moment. They don't show her say anything to them. But there's a thing. Everyone sees that for like, look at these guys as if.
And then they're just like, then Jamie's just like, do you want a kebab? And Rory's just like, you can't have one, but you can watch me eat one.
Yeah. I felt like that was a really good moment. And that's a good example of the off-screen stuff. Like, the audience shouldn't be dumb. Like,
I love the answer. I love when a TV show or a book or a movie or something, I love when a piece of media respects the audience enough and actually treats the audience with the level of intelligence. They're like, hey, we don't have to spoon feed you every single piece of information. You can piece this together yourself.
Exactly.
It helps so much. Like, it just helps piece things together so much better.
To call out, like, exactly what I'm talking about. Like, when Rupert is pulling a fast one on Nate and is trying to get him to cheat on his girlfriend, it's not said in the show, but the audience sees it exactly. Oh, he's trying to, you know, Rupert likes his girl. He's trying to get him to cheat on her. And everyone's going, oh, no, Nate, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. And Nate's Nate's smart. Like the audience. Like Nate knows what the audience knows. Nate sees it for what it is and leaves. And it's perfect. It doesn't need to be said. Everyone's thinking it. And it's the character isn't dumb either. The character sees it for what it is.
That's great. My dad says, need at least 6 more seasons of Lasso, please.
What was the other thing? Trent's book.
Trent's book. Did you see that the title change coming? Because I saw that a mile away.
Yeah. Not the actual title, but I knew, well, like, I didn't know what the new title would be, but I knew that Ted was going to make it not about himself.
Yeah, I knew Ted, his note was going to be, oh, he won't like the title. And then I was like, the Lasso way, the Richmond way. like straight away.
Yeah, so at the end, Trent gets the, he finishes his book and he gives it to Ted and Beard. And Ted's just like, I've got only one thing. It needs to change the title. It's not about me. It never was.
And I thought that was a good point as well because, they called it the Lasso way.
Lasso
came to Richmond. If it was just a hostile club, it wouldn't have worked. You know what I mean? Like, Lasso didn't change Richmond completely to what it is. Like, there's a lot of Richmond in it. The people were at Richmond and Lasso together, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, no. And then the montage ending where Rebecca gets with her mystery Swedish man. Swedish?
Yes. And a lot of people, I think, saw that coming. Were like, oh, she's going to run into him, right? She needs to run into him somewhere, right? I thought the airport and him being pilot was perfect because that brings any, the chance of them running into each other, way higher in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
Because they're both 100%. At airports all the time. So it's like, eventually. So it's more believable.
Yeah. And the actress that plays, the little actress that plays his daughter in that scene is the same actress that plays the young Rebecca every time Rebecca looks in the mirror and sees the young version of herself.
Oh, that's nice.
So yeah, that was sweet. So Rebecca finally, finding her man was fantastic. What else was there? Obviously Roy becoming, manager and coach was the best.
Yep. Also throughout the season, you would have noticed that ever since Ted kind of accepted the situation, with his wife, you notice they were texting each other, which before they weren't doing.
Yeah.
And then his relationship with his ex-wife has been improving. And then can't help but notice the new guy isn't there in the last scene.
He's not.
After he's not in on this kind of family game when they're watching the soccer.
Yep. And then at the end, when they're watching the soccer, he just keeps talking shit about it.
Yep.
And you can just feel the growing disdain from both Ted's son and his ex-wife in that moment.
Yeah, very bad play by him to, because he's obviously trying to just shoot Ted down in that situation, yeah. And it's ugly. So yeah, maybe someone's coming around back to Ted now that Ted's changed a bit as well.
And what an end, with the opening and the closing shots of Ted throughout the season. He's happy. And very much like the book, I think that we could get maybe a fourth season, not called Ted Lasso, maybe called The Richmond Way.
I think it would be interesting.
Because people think that it's not over. We're still going to have more.
I could see that the way they present the title at the end. And it's changed from Lasso to Richmond as well. Yeah. Very interesting. It's
essentially Ted's story's done.
Yeah.
But I don't know, I feel like everyone got a nice little wrap up. Nate finally.
Zorro.
Oh, Van Damme.
Van Damme changes his name back to Zorro, but it's not his original name. It's Zorro. That was amazing. It was and the team as well. I was like, oh, okay, it's close enough to him, his storyline finishing.
Jamie and his dad. I was in tears in that final part. And then shows Jamie with his dad in the rehab.
When Jamie's dad says no to taking him out very, very clearly. Yeah, that was a big moment for him, growing up.
100%.
Great ending for Rupert, the villain.
Oh, how good was Rupert? Did you feel a little bad for Rupert?
Of course, but he did it to himself in the end. He had a chance to redeem himself when him and Rebecca were getting along.
Yeah, and he tried to fucking mac on with it.
Yep, exactly. Then it all went to shit.
It all went to shit.
Rupert, first of all, I love that he basically looks like a supervillain.
Oh my God, and him walking on the field with his coat.
They really lent into it on that final episode.
Because
he's been in so many things, but he's been in some stuff where he's played like essentially like the Master from Doctor Who, and he looks perfect for it. Like just evil goatee all the way.
It's insane.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Sorry, because we obviously went back into his and Rebecca's past, and he loved Richmond as a kid. He climbed into Richmond and to watch free games. And those are like some of his most cherished memories. And because of his actions, right, his last scene is him looking out at the club and at the pitch, and everybody hates him and everyone's booing him. And 100%. And that's the last time he's going to like see that, and he leaves. Because he also like assaulted someone on the pitch.
Just look at him as a villain in this end part here. Like, he's
yeah.
Just a villain.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I'm trying to think of a character that he looks like, but it's just so stereotypical. Like,
oh, my God. It straight up does look like the Master from Doctor Who. You're so right.
To me, it's when he walks here. Look at his trench coat.
That's so good. Oh, yeah. My God.
Crazy.
He's got a nut out at the end, doesn't he?
Yes, that's a coach from the first episode that Rebecca fires.
Oh, right.
So, which makes sense why Rupert would hire him, because I assume Rupert hired him originally. But yeah, Ted Lasso. Big thumbs up. Big thumbs up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
Felt good. Again, coming into the last few episodes, did not feel like the end of a season, and then was just so satisfying and so right, and ending on Ted's smile, because he's all fixed.
He's all fixed.
And he's just coaching his boy.
Coaching his boy. You know what? Do you know what else happened, Chris? Do you know what else came back?
It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
I was just reminded of The Cats in the Cradle. When Dennis and Charlie do their father and son stripper show.
What an episode.
Beautiful.
Always Sunny came back last week. Or the week before, one of them.
What season are we up to now?
16.
16?
Jesus.
And
going strong.
It has to be mentioned that the people that make the show have gone through a lot of personal changes, and like the last few seasons have been some change ups from like the normal formula, and they were like doing some really artsy, interesting stuff. And and what have they done now?
They've gone back to formula.
They've gone back to formula. They've gone back to the full original, like
back to formula.
It's season 4, season 5, like golden era.
And you know what? And like, I'll say it, and I keep saying it. And they'll say it too. After redoing the pod, like doing their new podcast for the last year, that, you know, the premise of the podcast is they watch an episode of the show each, like from chronological order. And they keep going. I think they're on season 5 or 6 now. Can't remember what exactly they're up to, but yeah, they even start to admit, they're just like, it's affected the way we write the show again going into this new season, because like we've had a chance to come back and look to see what really worked about the show and like why these seasons were considered our best.
Yeah, and there's some really...
That's a very smart creative decision.
Mm-hmm.
Like, especially not only are you making a fun podcast for people to listen to, which is just extra stuff, you're also like assessing your own work and then like being able to refine your work from that. That's
the best part. Yeah, the episode they just went to was it was Mac and Dennis break up.
Yeah.
Which was a great episode. But
And like I was saying, the show was reaching a point where they were obviously getting tired of doing the same thing and going down these like different routes. And it's just come full circle to that, going back to what they loved doing about the original show. And that's what they see on the podcast.
And, oh, God, these first three episodes are great. It's a great start so far. I'm very excited to see what else they do this season. Eight episode season, and we've got three so far. So, you know, I personally, my favorite is episode one.
Mine's episode two.
So far. Yeah. Yeah. Inflation just is so fucking funny to me.
Inflation and the gun episode, like, both like classic. They feel like classic episodes. Like, they're up there with some of the best episodes, which seems unbelievable considering like season 16. Charlie, I thought he's a very noticeable, like, he's got some like parts of his character which they've brought back, him being angry and yelling, like, I feel like we haven't seen him in that state for a while, and it's just like perfect.
That, and I think, I'm trying to think, there's a moment in episode three, because like as they go, like they just like, they have no limits now of what they'll just drop the C-bomb 10 times an episode.
Yes, I did notice that. More so in the third episode. They FCs everything.
Yep.
Don't know how they get away with it.
D, that one of my funniest, my favorite moments of that third episode is like D telling the story about the old lady who she think might have cursed her. And you know, she goes, and, you know, she gave me some brownies. And then I went back and I got her a trophy that says cunt of the year.
That episode, they all talk about the monkey and call it a cunt or something, I believe.
Yeah. Oh, the monkey that's dead behind the kegs. Yeah.
There isn't like the first that episode even. I don't know how they get away with it, really. I guess because it's always like in some kind of context or something. But
yeah.
Even Charlie's sisters drop an F-bomb talking at Mac, which is Mac is gay.
You're right. The other F-bomb.
The actual F-bomb. Oh, no one cares about fuck. But yeah, so they say say the F-word to Mac, but Mac reacts how any audience member would. I think that's how they get away with it, because Mac just reacts by going, ooh, this is so distasteful. And like the whole scene kind of just breaks away from after he says that. And it's like, yeah, because that's the same shock they just gave everyone in the audience. And Mac just openly spits that
especially
out.
Coming off,
and it's a
one
joke.
One of their best episodes is the Hero or Hate Crime.
Yeah, exactly.
They literally talk about this, and then they just say every swear word in that one.
Yep.
They're really back to form.
They've always been on that level where their comedy is like smart enough, and them as writers are smart enough where they can get around these touchy topics by being funny and like getting what's like the funny, how to be funny about it, I guess.
Really enjoyed D this season. Her constantly gluing her hand to the walls in episode one was so funny.
When she glues her other hand to the wall and then her other hand comes into shot, which still has part of the other door glued to it, losing it.
One of my favorite moments of that is she glues her hand to the wall and like Charlie's like, you got on your own mess. You gotta sleep there if you want to. And then he goes to get back in bed. He goes, well, I'm not a bad host. I'll get you a pillow.
I'll glue a pillow to the wall.
Yeah, I'll glue a pillow to the wall. I'm not a bad host.
There was a kind of very subtle, smart joke in there as well, where she's like, it's a new form of protest, Charlie. People glue themselves to things. And he's like, what are you protesting? She's like, oh, I don't know. Like, perfect. Because you hear that someone glued themselves to something, but you don't hear what they freaking protested about, because that's how the media works.
Yep.
Yeah. it's a very subtle, very real joke in there as well.
Yeah, very, very enjoyable. Very enjoyable season so far. New episodes tomorrow night. I'm excited. And more importantly, Thursday. I don't think it's out in Australia, but if you live in America and you have Hulu, every single episode of The Bear season 2 drops. Whereas in Australia, we don't get it till next month on Disney. But you know, we got ways around that.
VPNs. They've done an entire season and it's just available.
That's exciting. When is that?
So on the high seas, it should be available Thursday.
Interesting. Okay.
Or VPN users.
Yeah, in America.
For people who are boring and like to, you know, do it the standard way, the less fun way.
Paying for movies? That's crazy.
It's crazy. Waiting? Why? Like, there's no excuse why.
It's un-American.
This show, why would they not
just put it up the same
It pisses me off. Because why can't it just come out when everything else comes out? It's coming out in America. Why is it not coming out here the same day? It's like, it's just bad business, guys.
Bad bureaucracy.
Business.
And also, remember Secret Wars comes out tomorrow.
Secret Invasion?
Not Secret Wars, it's a secret. Secret Invasion.
I did not remember that that comes out tomorrow, but I'll get on that for you.
I'll probably watch it. It's
You're actually going to check it out.
It looks like it might be a more serious Marvel show, which I think I'll be excited for.
I'm leaning a bit more into the spy espionage thriller.
I thought it was a
movie. It's another show.
TV show, mate. Sam Jack.
So if you want to wait and be normal and not do anything illegal, you have to wait to July 19th for The Bear on Disney Plus in Australia. And that's all so the episodes arbitrary. Come out on that date.
Excited. Very excited.
So yes.
I'm sure we mentioned
another
Severance is delayed because of the writer's strike or something, right?
Yeah, Severance got delayed.
A lot of things getting delayed from the writer's strike.
Yeah. That's why I'm very happy Ted Lasso and Succession ended.
Yep.
A few things are being delayed by the writer's strike, which is annoying.
Yeah. Just pay your writers, folks.
I don't understand why it's gone on for so long. Just pay them.
Like, this is how we got Transformers 2. Like,
it's how we got Quantum of Solace. It's how we got Transformers 2. You know, it's Quantum of Solace is an hour 45-minute movie because Daniel Craig started writing it.
Yeah.
It's bad.
We have these great epic TV shows because good writers exist.
Mm-hmm. It's like House of Dragons is delayed.
Things like Game of Thrones never would have happened if there weren't like good, gilded, like full-time writers that can hone their profession.
That's it.
So just pay them. It's not hard. They deserve it. It's not like they don't deserve it.
Yeah. Just pay people correctly, please. Thank you.
Did I talk about BlackBerry on the show? I did talk about BlackBerry, right?
BlackBerry? Yes, you did mention BlackBerry last week.
People should watch BlackBerry.
What's BlackBerry?
Oh, Chris, it's so your shit.
What is BlackBerry?
It's the true story about the BlackBerry phone.
Interesting.
Jay you're really Baruchel. Selling it based on that.
Very interesting. That's interesting.
Jay
anyway.
Baruchel and Glenn Howerton.
Okay.
It's a story of the meteoric rise and catastrophic. Thank you. I can't speak today. Demise of the world's first smartphone.
Yeah, it's not something you think of, but when you just mentioned it, then like, you know, a movie about it, I was like, oh, it's an interesting thing because, yeah, it is something that kind of just came and then just went.
They were the number one phone. And as soon as the iPhone came out, dead.
Yeah, they just didn't get behind the whole touchscreen thing, did they?
You should watch the movie. It's lots fantastic.
Yeah. Very interested.
Glenn Howerton, you know, it's like a really good Glenn Howerton performance. It's critically, it's got like a 98% Rotten Tomatoes and like an 80 meta score. So
has he played much serious roles in movies? Not really.
He's fantastic in it.
Yeah.
He plays the arsehole. He's the Justin Timberlake of the Social Network.
Okay. Yep.
Curry.
Great analogy.
He's the one that kind of fucks everything up. Mm. He's awesome in it though. And he's rocking a really nice bold look.
It's Speaking of technology, Alex, you've watched something else that's brand new to the TV show circuit.
I have. I've watched most of Black Mirror season 6.
I love season that 6. We said Blackberry, but that wasn't the source of the segue.
No, that's not the segue. That's too easy.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. See, I would have gone for the Blackberry segue, but I'm no expert.
That's why you don't do the segue.
Yeah.
That's it.
No, Black Mirror season 6 came out. And yeah, it's another Black Mirror season. The season 5 had 3 episodes and they're all pretty disappointing from what I remember.
Remind me?
Striking Vipers.
Yeah, that one was the most interesting for sure.
That was the two college friends that
something.
Start having sex in VR.
I like that one.
The other one was the Topher Grace one. I can't remember exactly what that was about. And then the last one was the Miley Cyrus one.
Yeah.
Which was the worst one.
The Hannah Montana one was very meh.
So this season we've got more episodes. We're back to 6 episodes. And you know, it's your Black Mirror antics. It's, you know, commentary
the
on technology
and our
relationships with technology. By far, it's not the highest rated episode of the season, but my favorite episode is one called, I'll get up here, I should remember, Lock Henry. It's about a couple that go to a Scottish town to film a documentary. Obviously in Black, it's the one that it feels like unlike anything Black Mirror have done before.
Okay.
In terms of technology wise, it's super basic. And it's more of a commentary. It's one of the ones where it's like a commentary of the technology itself compared to the commentary with our relationship with it and how the way we use it and get entertainment from it.
Yeah.
It's kind of fucked up. So it's one of those ones. Compared to Beyond the Sea, which was the second best episode, which is just a cool technology one where it's two astronauts in space and it's like an alternate 1960s universe, and Aaron Paul and his other guy are up in space and they have avatars down on Earth that they can link into, and while they're up in space and not working, they can be at home with their families.
Interesting.
So that's cool. All I'm going to say about that one. That one's, it's the longest one. It's an hour and 20.
Oh, movie length.
It's real good.
Feature length.
Joan is Awful is pretty good as well. It's got Selma Hayek. I'm not sure if anyone here has watched Schitt's Creek. Alexis from Schitt's Creek's in it.
Not enough to know who that is.
She's the daughter.
No.
Okay. and yeah, Selma Hayek and like that. Cool. It's a good one. It's your classic Black Mirror. That's, you know, your staple Black Mirror episode.
Tech is
haven't
evil.
Watched Demon.
Humans are good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or are they?
I haven't watched Demon 79 yet, which is the last episode of the season. So I'm excited to watch that one. Maisie Day.
That's a terrible
truly
one.
Truly awful.
Now you mentioned this one to me straight away, that just how awful it is.
Yeah, it is. You know how like when Black Mirror is a commentary on our relationship and how we use technology and all that, and it's good because it works within the story. This one kind of beats you over the head repeatedly and repeatedly until you're dead.
Like with the message about like the tech. Okay.
Yeah. I would advise never watching it.
Really?
It's really bad.
Whoa.
And then it's got a twist ending that is truly bad.
Does the concept have any real life like connection, or is it just...
Can I spoil it? No, not really.
It's not anything like related to real life tech. It's just...
Yeah, it's kind of... The nature of it being like the tech in it's everything that exists today. none of it's like super futuristic. Like none of it's futuristic at all.
Yeah,
it's a paparazzi episode.
Okay.
Where you follow Zazie Beetz as a paparazzi person, and you know how they kind of destroy people's lives.
Yeah,
and that, and then there's this other character who, you know, she's clearly having a really hard time with drugs and everything, and they're all like hunting to find her to get the scoop and get photos of her looking bad and shit. And do you care if I spoil it?
I'd rather you don't spoil it.
All right, I won't. It's got a twist ending at the end that's truly awful.
Now, this is worse than Smithereens.
Which one's Smithereens?
It's the episode where it's not really a mystery or anything. It's just a Uber driver kidnaps a person.
No, you're thinking of the hit film Spree starring...
No, it's called Smithereens, and it's got the guy that plays Moriarty in the Sherlock's, the newer Sherlock.
Oh,
that's a Topher Grace one.
He's a very good actor. He's a brilliant actor. They gave him a very shit part because shit episode.
That one's not too bad. I wouldn't say that's the worst one I've seen.
Okay,
I'd say
it's worse than that.
It's worse than my least favorite episode of, and I think most people's least favorite before this, which is the Waldo moment.
Waldo moment is not great. Smithereens is worse for me for sure.
Definitely worse than Bandersnatch.
Yeah, Bandersnatch, I don't really count it. That's, you know, that's a separate, like, let's use Netflix interactive system for a.
That was very terrible.
Yeah, for a terrible episode.
So boring. I didn't even know if it was episode. I didn't even know if I finished it, man. Because it
it's a choose your own adventure book.
Awful
on Netflix, and that getting that concept came much before making it a good episode. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. But yeah, I love like Hang the DJ, USS Callister. Hang the DJ is the one where they get the timer to tell them how long their relationship's going to last.
Yeah, I like that one. That's a great one. White Christmas, my favorite.
White Christmas. Shut Up and Dance is a classic one everyone loves.
Black Museum, basically White Christmas continued because it's just like a month. There's like a, it's like three, another three tales.
Like White Bear. White Bear's really good. The prison sentence one where she wakes up every day and can't remember anything. She's being hunted. Be Right Back is good. That's the Domhnall Gleeson one where he dies and she gets the robot of it.
That is one of the most powerful ones towards the end of that episode. He's really good acting in that. Good old General Hux.
The entire history of you. The memory plant one where you can record everything you've
first
seen.
First episode I saw. Quite good.
Yeah.
That's the one I'm trying to think of. Nosedive's
the one that I can't watch parts of.
Really?
Because it's like when Michael Scott has to tell the kids that he's not going to buy their tuition.
Scott's tots is tough. I can't watch that episode.
That episode is truly just like, I can't do it. It's secondhand embarrassment's unreal.
Yeah, just to go off on an office tangent. That's a very interesting, like, most hated episode of a show. That's not a bad, not because it's a bad made episode. The episode's too good that it's unwatchable.
Like, at what it's seeking out to do, it's too good at achieving that.
Everyone hates it, and it's everyone's least favorite episode because it's so effective. It's made so well.
Yeah,
which is super funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. What a Scott's Tots. People, go watch it.
Yeah, it's tough.
I'd rather watch one of the ISIS videos than that again.
Jesus.
God. Oh, and also just to say this, I'm 54 minutes into Bowers Afraid, which is the Ari Aster 3-hour Joaquin Phoenix anxiety movie.
Okay. I like
how
Ari
is it so far.
Super heightened and fantastical. In terms of like, I think it's all in his head and how he really, like, we're in his head and like things are probably not like this, but because he's got anxiety, he's seeing the worst of everything. So like in the beginning, he walks out into his street and there's just people stabbing each other and just naked people trying to murder, like crazy people running down the street. And I think it's just him being scared to leave his apartment.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's super. It's interesting so far. It's got me, and I'm interested to watch the rest of it. I'm doing it in chunks because it's 3 hours.
Yeah, that's and also that's like a lot of anxiety in one go.
Yeah.
So that's fair.
It's like Uncut Gems was fucking hard to sit through.
Yeah, yes. Uncut Gems was.
Another good example of so good that it's hard to watch.
Yep.
Uncut Gems for me is like, yeah, I'm like sweating from anxiety. Yeah. Like, yeah.
I'm just like, I want to yell at him every time he gets a wind and he just comes down.
No, stop, stop. Yeah, just gets deeper and deeper.
Speaking of hard to watch, everyone's favorite film of last year, Sony's hit Morbius. That's right, folks. It's Morbin time.
Yes.
Sony are back at it again with another...
Brayden, you've seen Morbius.
Another obscure Spider-Man character that mainstream audiences don't know about. And they're releasing Kraven. They released a Red Band trailer today. And I don't know if any of the review guys have seen this, but Aaron Taylor Johnson is out here absolutely murdering fools.
It's weird.
It's real weird.
Sounds weird.
It's really. I instantly scrolled down to the comments just to see
Kraven
the
time.
Inevitable. It's Kraven time.
It's Kraven time.
Which is perfect. I'm so glad it's the internet is instantly messing with this again. Sony just. I don't know what they must be thinking, but
what are they doing? Sorry.
It looks real fucking weird. Like, it's really weird. Instead of Kraven having, like, because Kraven gets his, like, heightened senses and, like, super strength and speed.
Is that
and
how
stuff.
He gets it in the comic books? By
no, he has, like, a herb tea mix.
So much cooler.
Yeah. Interesting. And they're like, it's fucking lion's blood.
Yeah.
It's lame. Pretty wild.
And he doesn't have his accent. Russell Crowe's got the accent. He doesn't.
Yeah, I was a bit disappointed by that because Aaron Taylor Johnson could probably crush that.
But the sad thing, it comes out in October, right?
Yes.
The big Kraven month because Spider-Man 2 comes out in October as well.
Yeah, wow. Talk about brand synergy. God damn.
So we're gonna have a better Kraven in the game.
Yeah, exactly. If you want Kraven to be a good movie, just go and play Spider-Man 2.
Here's the thing, though. Like, because it's Aaron Taylor Johnson, I'm in.
I know. It's really annoying, isn't it?
I really like him. He was great in Bullet Train. I really want him to be James Bond.
Ooh, yeah.
And he's just like... He's
fit as fuck in this movie.
Reading the comments was also another one where it's like, I just want him to hit someone and then turn to them and go, well, you didn't see that coming? Because it was Quicksilver.
Marvel character.
Yeah, and then obviously we had a little shot in there where a bunch of spiders came down on him.
Yeah, that seemed so like, get it,
Spider-Man.
Get it?
I guess. Get it, Spider-Man.
Get it, Spider-Man. They give you a tease of Rhino at the end, and this is like a 3-minute trailer as well. Like they give you the whole movie. Like a tiny little tease of Rhino at the end as well.
Did you know Russell Crowe was in the movie?
Russell Crowe is his dad.
He's doing a much better accent.
Yeah, thank God. But I hope we get to see Chameleon in it as well. Craven's cousin, brother? I can't remember. Chameleon's cool. But yeah, I think this movie's going to be dog shit, but it's going to be fun. I hope it's fun. Jesus.
I think though this is going to fail from the fact that Sony are going to slap R on it and think people are going to like it because it's R.
Yeah, and then people are going to see it and people are going to be like, wow, that didn't need that at all. I'm I had no idea. I have so low expectations for that film. If it does anything good, I'll be impressed.
And meanwhile, the movies that should be R get pushed down to like an M rating somehow.
Yep, that's it. Wild. On the complete polar opposite side of things, I'm going to recommend people go check out the new trailer that just released for Nimona, which is coming to Netflix soon. It's animated adaptation of Nimona, the graphic novel from Nate Stevenson, about a shape-shifting person and a, like, being a bad guy, like helping the supposed bad guy of this town. It looks fucking great. It looks really good. I love that animated movies are getting really creative again in this post Spider-Verse world that we live in today. So I'm very happy to see that, and it looks really good.
So, speaking of something else, quickly.
Looking forward.
First reactions for Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning are out. It had its premiere in Rome. Ooh. And it had some first press screenings earlier this week or today. And everyone's saying it's another great one.
I thought you were just going to say it's another Mission Impossible.
They're saying it's another, you know, top tier. People are wrongly comparing it to Top Gun Maverick for some reason.
Those are very different movies.
Yeah, that's strange.
Which I hate that someone said, it doesn't have the heart that Top Gun Maverick does. I'm like, just because they star Tom Cruise, don't put them up against each other.
No, Top Gun Maverick's all about heart.
But that was just one person saying that.
Mission Impossible is about blowing shit up and driving motorcycles off cliffs.
Mission Impossible is about giving you the most enthralling action sequences in camera.
Yeah.
So, and apparently they've nailed it again. Some people say better than Fallout than the best Mission Impossible. Some people say pretty damn close to Fallout.
Damn.
So, that's everything I need to hear to now make it the longest wait to a movie.
When's that hitting cinemas?
July. Next month. Mid-month,
maybe? That's not too long.
People are now taking the projections for Barbie and Oppenheimer to stupid levels because for some reason everyone thinks that these two films should battle to the death, and whichever one wins is the better movie at the box office.
They're very similar films, Alex.
Yeah.
Well, here's everyone's, like, because someone, like, you know, one of the news outlets went, oh, Barbie's projecting to beat Oppenheimer it's opening weekend in the box office, and people were quoting it like, one of them's a PG kids film, the other one's an R-rated 3-hour historical drama.
You're really putting off like the most mainstream pop thing that you could possibly release and like a Cinemaphiles film.
It's so stupid.
It's pretty difficult to compare. Mind you, I cannot wait for Barbie. Fucking, they did Architecture Digest, little house, like Barbie's dream house tour or whatever with Margot Robbie on the set. It's a great shot of the set. Like, it really shows it off well. It's a great video. It's like 7 minutes long. It's good.
Bro, that fucking, there was a pink paint shortage because of the movie.
yeah, I saw that.
Which so is many amazing.
Props. And just to mention this as well, we're still doing the box office.
Yes. Yeah, we'll end on the box office here.
So here we are. Look.
I'm crushing it.
Brayden, you don't have a movie yet, so you're cool.
I did hear that The Flash wasn't doing amazing.
Well, it could be worse, Chris. You could be Elemental and have the worst opening ever in Pixar.
I don't even know what that is.
So...
Chris, Elemental is Zootopia, but with the elements.
Okay.
So, imagine a big city, but replace all the animals with fire, water, earth, and air.
There's only four. That's not many.
No, they're not all one person.
The Last Airbender already did this, okay?
The Flash is not too hot at the moment, much like Elemental. So we're both sad there. Dial of Destiny had more critics go out and see it, and they came back and said it's not as bad as everyone else that can said it was. Ooh. They're like, it's a fun Indiana Jones movie. It's not in the same league as the other three, but it's much better than Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, and it's just a lot of fun.
That's good.
People gave a ovation for Harrison Ford, I think.
Mm.
I rewatched kind of been complete dog shit. And that film holds up.
Raise Locked Arts. Wait, people need to watch Temple of Doom.
I'm about to rewatch Temple of Doom.
They all hold up. They're all fine.
Yes, but I hate that I'm in the minority where Temple of Doom is, I think, is my favorite. And yep. everyone else looks at me and goes, "You've got to be kidding, sir."
And I'm just like, as a kid, I never saw a difference between Temple of Doom and the other two. They were all three great and awesome.
They're all three like yeah. the exact
and
same.
I keep telling people that Temple of Doom's my favorite, and then they go, "Oh, it's Crusader Raiders!" Like easily, I'm just like, I don't know, man. There's a point in Temple where they go in like halfway through the film where he pushes on a statue and they go into a secret passageway and then they never exit that for the rest of the movie. That is halfway through the film. They are in the temple. They're watching it all happen. They're doing the Kalima. Yep. They're ripping hearts out. They're yep. doing voodoo and it's sick. It's the best. It's the most fast paced film I've ever seen. As soon as they go into that temple, the movie's over because it's that quick.
Yeah.
The Minecraft chase is amazing. Yeah, the bridge scene's fantastic. It's all it's you know, I love Temple of Doom. It is my favorite and I will say it with pride. And I don't even think Kingdom of the Crystal Skull is that bad. I find a lot of enjoyment out of that movie.
I am actually very interested to rewatch it soon to see what it actually is like.
Look, as much as I agree, it's great. Come on. Come on. Last Crusade. Last Crusade. How? Alex, you got
I mean, yes. Last one.
Voodoo.
I loved Connery.
Voodoo's a fine enemy. Okay, Voodoo. Yeah, Voodoo's a pretty good villain to have. Nazis. Okay.
Yeah, Nazis suck.
Hitler's in the film. Yeah, Hitler is in the film.
Hitler is in Last Crusade. Yes.
Okay. I'd forgotten Hitler was in Last Crusade.
He's in it.
Oh my god! I cannot wait for Michaela to get to that point and just be like, "What the fuck? Hitler's in this."
Indy gets an autograph from him. This happens. And you're telling me this isn't the best Indiana Jones movie? And you're also telling me people were surprised when there was aliens?
Yeah. I mean, you watch that first one and you're like, okay, no, the aliens are totally possible in this universe.
Exactly. Time you got to watch possible. All of them and be like, voodoo was here. There
it's
was
like
Hitler.
Full on magic and everything.
Yeah.
Like,
wait, so Chris, what's your stance on Kingdom? Fine?
Oh, it's the worst, but it's
yeah. Of course,
it was fun enough.
It's fun.
Yeah.
The fridge scene obviously is fucking ridiculous.
Fuck. Oh
man, Shia. The ants were something. Yeah, the fridge was like walk out of cinema worthy. But the ants were cool enough.
The worst moments to me in the film are the fridge, Shia swinging like a monkey.
Yep. That was amazing.
And yeah, probably the aliens, but I never really cared.
And you know, if the Nazis are your go-to totalitarian villains, who's second? KGB.
The Russian. KGB.
Perfect.
That's it. That's how they do it.
Hey.
So they did okay.
It looks like Dial Destiny's back to formula because I think our villains are Nazis again.
Exactly. I know. When I saw that, I was like, they know what they're doing. Back if they could formula. Get Sean Connery in there also, but obviously it can't be done.
Sean Connery and Harrison Ford are fucking fantastic in Last Crusade.
That was what I also needed to mention, is why that stands out as the best, even though the others are equal.
He wouldn't be stupid enough to bring it back to the place I was sending it from.
That's why I sent it to you.
Right?
Yeah, every single interaction between them is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's the famous shooting the tail of the plane out. And they got us.
Yep.
God damn.
Well, I'm done.
All right. Well, everyone should go rewatch the Indiana Jones films before the new one comes out. Thank you all for joining us. That's
quickly.
Also
watching this really bad reality show on Binge called F-Boy Island.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Not Fuckboy Island.
No.
Just for a bit of fun. For those who don't know, you've got 24 men and 3 women, and 12 of the guys are F-Boys, self-proclaimed F-Boys. And the other 12 are nice guys. And it's up to the 3 women to get rid of all the F-boys. And if they all have to pick a guy at the end, I guess. And if they end up with the F-boy, with the nice guy, they both get money. But if they end up with an F-boy, the F-boy takes the full sum of money.
Jesus, what?
Yeah.
Okay.
Brilliant. Brilliant concept.
That's not what I thought that
amazing.
That was going to be about at all.
And there is one guy in there who is a straight up villain.
Oh my
god. Like he's talking to one of the girls and one of the girls is like, yeah, I'm single because like I walked in on my longtime fiance having an escort bent over his desk at work. And
Jesus.
And like she tells it to this guy. And you know, this guy's an F-boy. He pretty much tells you to the camera he's an F-boy.
Yeah.
And he starts talking to the other guys. He goes, yeah, man, like, she was telling me that, you know, her ex-fiance had a escort and was doing an escort. He's like, you know, that just sounds like she's got bad pussy. And like,
Jesus.
And so like, we were shocked. God. We were on the floor when we heard that.
Yeah.
Like, we were like, this guy is a menace.
He's the easiest to hate person in the entire show.
And he's
still in
it. And we made the promise to ourselves that the only reason we're going to start watching it is if he gets voted off. Because he's by far the most entertaining. But then in episode 3, they reveal that every F-boy that gets not kicked off the show, they end up in a place called Limbo, where they have a chance to redeem themselves and fix their ways of being F-boys. So even when this guy does get kicked off, we're still going to have him on the show.
Fucking nice. Limbo is so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shit. Oh, someone needs to give the producer a raise. That's...
And there's this guy who we don't really know much of. And like, you know how in these shows you have the ones that the camera focuses on and we get to know them because they're the entertaining ones.
Yeah.
And then there's these other ones who we kind of see in the background and then they get voted off. We're like, yeah, that makes sense. You're annoying. Or like, you don't really provide anything. Yep. There's this one guy that gets voted off and he's like, yeah, I'm an F-boy. But this other guy starts crying because he developed a friendship with the guy in 3 days, in like 2 days. And he's just like, and he's just really pissed off and upset with the girls that they voted this other guy off because he was close with him.
Oh my God, that's great. That actually sounds like good television.
Yeah. I would recommend watching it because it's ridiculous.
Jesus, I cannot believe in the same show we talked about how beautiful Ted Lasso ended that you got to recommend Fuckboy Island.
It's like you got to see it to believe it.
It's like the polar opposite of Jury Duty.
I'm done now. I'm officially done.
Yeah, okay. Thank you all so much for joining us for a full-on, pretty packed episode 208 of MMT Millennial Movie Talk. You can follow us on your podcast of choice. If you can, leave a review over there. It really helps, and we'd greatly appreciate it. Head over to YouTube, subscribe over there, leave a like on the video, leave a comment on what you got up to. Chat in the live chat if you happen to be if you happen to catch the episode live, like my dad, who is a legend. Thank you.
Thank you.
He's always in there. Apparently, a submarine before the Titanic went missing.
Yeah,
recently.
Did you not hear about the submarine that went missing?
I did not. And then my dad made a joke about it in the chat, saying he bets that it was the Megalodon,
so,
and they should send.
So
in Statham.
One of the tourist submarines that go down.
Yeah.
And like show tourists the Titanic, the ruins of the Titanic. It went missing when it went down.
I said, they do that. There wouldn't be many. It's very deep where the Titanic
is. Five people missing in this submarine.
Okay, so it's a 5-person sub. That would be an expensive ticket.
I assume like we should like do an update on this news next week because I assume they'll find something.
Yeah.
We're missing 5 of the 1%ers.
Yeah, I'm saying. Jesus. They're definitely 1%ers because that's not like an easy trip. Yeah,
we can only hope. We can only pray.
Yeah.
Well, I hope fine. I don't hope anyone dies. They could be good 1%ers that give a lot of money to charity.
Yeah, but if they just got a little shaken, that would be nice too.
Yeah, it'd be nice. You know, if they're like, oh, life's so precious, I need to help the world.
Exactly.
You can follow us on your social media of choice and add Michael on Facebook, even though he's sick. And as always,
I'm Alex.
I'm Brayden.
I'm Christian.
And we're out of here. Goodbye, you filthy actors.